Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is a man who walks up to aliens, presses their udders, and enjoys their blue milk. It's John Levengood.
I mean, I'm just trying to follow suit with Luke in the original, right? You got to get a little bit of green milk out there.
There's some green milk, some blue milk. You got to enjoy that milk.
I mean, in reality, Earth milk, not good when it's green. Just FYI for you kids listening at home. But I mean, space milk when it's green, apparently that's ideal.
I feel like space milk, if it's white, it's bad.
Right. And you know what? When I'm getting it from a sweaty, slimy sea beast on the crags of my island, I want to make sure that I get that milk and just drink that unpasteurized.
That sea beast in The Last Jedi was super relaxed.
This had clearly happened before, though. I feel like Luke's behavior with that sea beast wouldn't have been treated as so socially acceptable the first couple visits. But then they built, you know, like maybe he brought some treats and they became friends, or it just tolerates him milking it from its sea udders.
I'm going to bring in our third guest here, Megan Hoffmeyer. How are you, Megan?
Hello.
How did you feel about the space milk on Luke's island, Meg?
It was a little weird, but, you know, there were a lot of little details and side bits in the movie that you can kind of just move forward with the rest of it. It was a very chock full kind of movie.
Did you see the scene where there was a sea beast on Luke's island in the background? Did you see that?
In the background?
Yeah.
No, I thought you were talking about when he caught the minnow, and then with the same spear, he caught the bigger fish. No, that's what I thought you were.
In one random shot, there's a massive sea beast just swimming around.
I totally missed that.
Yeah.
It kind of does like a dolphin dive out of the water behind Rey as she's walking.
Let's talk more about the milking. Do you think those poor little fish ladies knew about the milk? They must have. So
I mean,
told them.
They, at some point, they said that they've always been the caretakers of that island. So I have a feeling that the fish nuns, or whatever I'm going to call those things, it's like at some point they probably were like, whatever they sound like. Like, what's Master Luke doing? And it's like, looks like he's fondling a sea cow.
And that sea cow did not care. He looked like a large man in a sauna.
Yeah, right. Just sitting there. Like a middle-aged or older, like, guy at a country club.
Like Paul Giamatti in a sauna.
If his towel was tucked back so far, you saw something you didn't want to, it wouldn't even care.
I saw one article that suggested that they were quite enthusiastic in response to what Luke was doing.
I mean, that seems so silly. At first, when I saw that, I felt like that is not right. But then I started giggling, and I'm like, this is deliberately funny, so I guess it's not offensive.
I didn't even think about it twice until the article.
It's like an old school bit, you know, like it's like this is offensive. It's like everything in the movie is offensive. So it's not offensive anymore. Like, I was just thinking, like, what is he doing to that thing? And it, like, that thing is just taking it. And then it was out of mind after that, because so much cool stuff happens in this movie. And there's so many funny parts. And, you know, you've got the porgs and the cute ice foxes, and you have all these other funny little bits. And so, like, it's easy. It doesn't stick with you for too long while you're watching. But
yeah, we're going to go see it again this week, because I feel like I forgot 60% of it.
Yeah, oh, I got to see it again. I have to see it. I loved it. I'm not saying that. I don't know. I don't know where I'd rank it, but I absolutely adored watching this movie.
Hey, so before we talk more about this, in the words of John Lazavath, I was going to say Lagablad.
Lagablad?
I was going to miss up.
Lagavath?
I was going to mix up Lazavath and Levengood. It came out really weird. But I think we have some listener questions.
We do. Our opening listener questions come from Dylan from Melbourne, Australia,
who has
totally turned the tides and given us very short questions. I wonder if that was deliberate from past heckling. I hope we didn't hurt his sensibilities. But so Dylan asks, what is your favorite movie explosion? And he actually added a caveat. He suggested a ban on Arnold Schwarzenegger movies.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked that there was a ban on Arnold. And I put together, all right, so you got Jaws, you got Dr. Strangelove, you got the world's largest one in Spectre, but the one I kind of want to talk about is in Waterworld, where Dennis Hopper and his crew are attacking the atoll, and Kevin Costner's escaping, and he shoots this massive gunship with a spear gun, and he starts kind of like pointing the massive gunship towards Dennis Hopper's, I don't know, frigate. And Dennis Hopper's like, hey, there's coming this way. And they're like, what's his name? He's like, his name's Chuck. So like, Chuck, stop, Chuck, stop. And then Dennis Hopper's like, well, maybe he likes to be called Charles. So everyone starts calling him Charles. And then just before their boat gets blown up, Dennis Hopper goes, adios, cousins, jumps in the water. And there's this massive explosion. I mean, we're talking a huge explosion on the sea. And I'm writing a post about Waterworld.
Is that basically what?
What?
Is that basically what happens whenever an 80s car gets into a car crash? It just explodes?
Yeah, fender bender and it explodes. But you should see this. If you watch on YouTube, it's Escaping the Atoll, and you'll see a really impressive explosion in that film. I think stylistically, I like the one in Spectre because Bond and Lea Seydoux are just looking awesome in front of it. And then I think the most thematic and most impactful is in Bridge in the River Kwai, where they blow up the bridge, and then the guy goes, madness. Like, that's got to be my favorite. But yeah, I probably took your answer, Levengood, but that's my favorite explosions.
You know, my answers were a little off the wall. First off, I saw the movie Deepwater Horizon, which was way better than I thought it would be. You know, even though it's Mark Wahlberg trying to be serious the whole time, it didn't come off like The Happening. And that whole movie is like a huge explosion. And in the end, it's like so much color corrected fire that I kind of just had my like movies for guys who like movies moment. And I'm just like, yes, fire makes it better. But I don't know.
I love that. It's crazy that Kurt Russell's mustache put that fire out.
I mean, that's the only thing that could have put it out.
Yeah.
Was Ego's mustache.
I know we're moving forward, but which one do you like better? The explosions in Deepwater Horizon, the explosions in Deep Rising, or the explosions in Event Horizon?
So Deep Rising actually has, like, it should, if it was a bigger budget movie, that would have been the best. Yeah, because it's going through the hallway, those corridors, right, on the ship.
He's on a jet ski, though.
Right. I know, but you see, if it was a big budget movie, the explosion would have looked great, even though it would have been stupid. And then it would have come out, you know, and just like shot out like a geyser. But I mean, Event Horizon, that had so much creepy stuff scarring my soul that I wasn't as affected by the explosion. It's like I was numbed to the intensity of that.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, I mean, you're looking at Sam Neill, like, especially if it's the first couple times you've seen it, like, where we're going, we won't need eyes to see the suffering. And you're just like, whoa, evil Sam Neill. And then like something explodes. It could be the best explosion ever. You're like, whatever. That's not as bad as what I don't need eyes to see in hell.
You know, I think if you and I were walking along the street and like some people come up and threaten us, we're like, yeah, come on, bring it. We're big guys. But if Sam Neill walked up to us and said the bit about eyes, you and I would just be like, we give up.
Nope. I just freeze. I might be helpless.
Yeah.
I might be helpless. And, you know, it's funny, though, when I answered this, the first thing that came to mind was Jason Goes to Hell.
Oh,
because I put the GIF on the review on the website, but they ambush him, a SWAT team, and they detonate him somehow. I don't even know how, like, they shot him with a rocket launcher or something. And it's not the explosion that's great. It's just how fun it is, because you see this mannequin of organs shaped like Jason explode, and it's just so silly looking, and that really stuck with me. Like, that was actually what first came to mind before I really put thought into it.
So I have to go against the Arnold movie ban, because one of my favorite explosions is in The Last Stand when Johnny Knoxville so there's this really random assortment of weapons, and somehow Johnny Knoxville ends up with a flare gun as opposed to a stereotypical weapon, and he shoots it at one of the bad guys and hits the guy's he's got like a belt of ammo strapped across his back, hits this guy's ammunition with his flare gun, and the guy explodes.
I love that movie.
It was cheeky.
I love that scene.
It is an Arnold movie, but it's not your typical.
But it's Johnny Knoxville blowing somebody up, okay, not Arnold. Okay. So it's a good one.
And then what about the one in Iron Man where he's supposed to – it's an anti-explosion really, where he's got this super weapon. This is the bunker buster that'll bust the bunker below the bunker. That you just busted. And then he shoots the thing and it kind of fizzles out.
Yeah, it makes like a balloon running out of air noise. Boink. the best anti-explosion. Ooh, that's a good post. Anti-explosions.
There you go.
I gotta say though, you really caught me with Jaws. Like, that was a great explosion that was more about the shark exploding than the fire explosion, you know?
Smile, you son of a bitch.
Like, that was a good one. That's a good pick, Jaws.
And like, just, if you get a chance, watch the YouTube clips about Spectre and the explosion. Cause it's a huge explosion. Broke the world Guinness record for largest explosion on the screen. And of course you have like Bond, Daniel Craig, you are looking really svelte and chill or bored. I don't know with him.
You know what's a niche kind of area you could explore on this one? Gross explosions.
Oh, that should be a podcast. That should be a whole podcast.
So Dylan, that'd be fun, but it's a kind of a weird medium.
Originally, Dylan's question was even shorter, but I asked him to adjust it. Originally, he said, "What are the best explosions?" Obviously, in movies. And so, but now that he reworded it, it has like 6 or 7 words instead of 5.
Yeah, I gotta tell you something, Dylan. First, you start off with questions that are too long, takes forever to read, but then you do ones that are too short, make us confused.
Is it like, too short?
I feel like you're messing with us, Dylan.
One day he's just going to ask a one-word question. It's just going to be why.
It's just one or the other with you, Dylan. There's no 8 letters. It's either 4 or 37,000.
It's like a short story. Well, yeah. So Dylan, are there any other thoughts on our explosions?
I like I'm going with the Sam. Well, I just like Sam Rockwell, so I'm going with Iron Man 2 with the anti-explosion.
I kind of want to come back around to your Jaws. I kind of now want to make that my number one.
I'm really surprised Mark didn't say anything about Sorcerer.
Well, have you watched Sorcerer?
No.
Y'all.
The John Wayne movie, is it?
No, I'm sorry. William Friedkin, where it's Roy Scheider and crew. They have to. It's a remake of Wages of Fear. They have to go through this dirty, terrible jungle and these rickety old vans. And they have to cross over these crazy bridges. And they have to blow up this massive oil fire with nitroglycerin.
That's very unstable.
Yeah, but it's like these four criminals just trying to make some fast money going through. I mean, there are scenes in this movie where I felt like I was getting the flu because it's just so grimy. Listen, all you listeners, Sorcerer.
What year was that movie?
77. It was released when Star Wars came out.
It's back there.
And much like Ferdinand, it did not do well. Like this weekend.
There weren't very good explosions in Ferdinand.
No.
Aww.
No.
So second question, also from Dylan, also with a suggested Arnold movie ban. And the answer is, he asks, what's the best kiss-off line before killing someone?
All right. I got this.
Now, I mean, Arnold, I could give like the 20 best ones might all be Arnold. So it's a good ban.
Well, I got 4 really good ones. Do you mind if I'll go from 4, 3, 2, 1?
Sure.
I don't want to take yours.
No, no worries.
All right. And Scott Pilgrim, he's like, you're blowing up. Right now. And then he knocks him out. And
Scott, he like headbutts him into coins.
And then Team America, hey, terrorist, terrorize this.
Terrorize this. Yeah.
And then from Army of Darkness, good, bad, I'm the one with the gun.
I'm the one with the gun.
And then I like when he says, you got something on your face. And he throws that shovel full of dirt on his face. But I think the best one, and I remember seeing this in the theater in, I believe, 98, well, I don't know when this came out, but whenever it came out, I sat there in the theater, and when Trinity from Matrix said, dodge this, I was like, oh, right. It was so gangster. I wanted to pick people over on the theater and do laps with them. So I liked it. 2 words. Dylan would have loved it. I just thought it was gangster. It was cool.
And dodge this.
And it was just so stylish. And I don't, it was like played for laughs, but it was also, it wasn't played. It wasn't like, hey, take your arm off. And then he like ripped his arm off. Like she just, it was applicable to the situation. And she,
you know,
just,
yeah,
lit the dude up.
It's like, if you were a shallow movie watcher, you'd feel like it was crass. But when they were first in her lifetime of going into the Matrix, when she was first going in, people probably were warning her about the nature of the agents. And no matter what they said, she was probably like, I get that they're tough, but they can't be that tough. And then she went and saw it for herself. And she probably came back saying like, holy shit, they were just dodging everything. That's unreal. And then she knew, right? And then she'd go back in the Matrix and think, okay, well, now I know that. I'm going to try it this way. And then they keep, you know, no matter how much she upped her game, they keep dodging it. So she was like living the fighting for her life frustration of them dodging everything. So it's like, that line, that was like just welling in her gut, you know, waiting to come out. Vengeance.
You know what I like about podding with you, John, is occasionally you come up, you take one line and you just built an entire mythology around it. It's like the time when you came up with a Predator movie. That was about.
Well, no, but I mean, don't,
it's
don't
good
you,
though, man. No, I love it. Like, yeah, I mean, I never even thought sense. About that. Yeah, that makes tons of sense.
But. Whereas, like, when Arnold gives his lines, like, you cannot. It's like, no, that he came up with that in that moment. There was nothing in his life that had to do with those lines before that, you know. Whereas, again, like the Dodge, that she was living that. That was a fight for her life, knowing that they dodged everything. Like that's just it. It's right up there. I saw that.
Felt good too. Like dodge this, blam,
dude. But of course, then there's the other reality is that she knows that it's just going to reappear in the next passerby on the street to try and kill her again, which is a part of the frustration. Is when you think you finally got. Can you imagine the first time that one of them goes into the Matrix and kills an agent like that, and then discovers that, oh shit, that very next person walking on the street turns into him, and it's like. I'll bet most of the people who die in the Matrix die right after they kill an agent for the first time because they didn't see it coming.
You know what I hate, though, is in the second one, she's like, dodge this again.
Like in parentheses.
And then the third one, she's like running around with the millions of them going, dodge this, dodge this, dodge this, dodge this,
yet
dodge
continue
this,
to try
dodge
to dodge
this, dodge this,
this,
dodge this. And she's just running around in circles yelling at people to dodge stuff.
That's like how when Parlay came up in the first Pirates of the Caribbean, it seemed so clever to the audience. And then after that, in each sequel, said, Parlay, Parlay, I'm using a word that I heard before, like just parroting it like a fool.
Yeah, exact. Dodge this again.
So I saw this video of the 100 best one-liners before killing someone. I think I saw all those in it. And I saw, like, I wrote down, like, 20, and I realized, like, not all of them deliver well. But one that I love, not because it's the best line, but because it's kind of just the blatantly dumbest, is when Halle Berry in X-Men.
Yes! That was my first thought! I'm sorry, guys. That was my first thought. I'm sorry.
So she's got, like, some gust that launches Toad off of the Statue of Liberty, and he shoots out his tongue to catch it. And the wind is blowing him back, and she says, do you know what happens to a toad when it gets struck by lightning? Dramatic pause. The same thing that happens to everything else. And then she just zaps that punk. Like, it was just, and I'm watching this, I totally forgot the stupid line. That was the one that I really just giggled for. I mean, there were a bunch of great Harrison Ford lines in 89.
Get off my plane.
I think five lines from this 100 best ones are all from The Running Man.
Oh, nice. But, like, dude, that's the first thing I thought, too. Like, you know, Joss Whedon wrote that line, and it just wasn't delivered. Like, in his head, I bet he was like, man, this line is amazing. But you can't do a kiss-off one line and make it two lines.
You know, another one that I really loved was Kurt Russell in Stargate. Where he has that little like teleporter that goes down like a floor or something, or from the ship to the pyramid, and you know Ra has escaped to go try and heal himself and escape in his ship or whatever, and then Kurt Russell puts the bomb that he brought in it, and he says, "Give my regards to King Tut, asshole," and then it just goes to, and I'm like. But again, it's not necessarily totally uncharacteristic, but it really didn't fit the bill of the guy who was thinking about killing himself and his flashbacks in the movie and who was on a suicide mission.
So imagine yourself 10 years down the line and you're with some buddies in a bar and you're like, so I tell this alien, you know, say hello to King Tut, asshole, then I blow him into smithereens, and everyone's in the bar is like, man, this guy's next level.
Yeah, he's see, I don't even want to disagree with him.
Yeah.
Megan, would you disagree with Kurt Russell telling that story with his 1,000-yard stare?
I don't think I'd ever disagree with Kurt Russell.
About anything ever.
About anything ever.
Even when he's trying especially, to name Caribbean islands.
Especially his love for Belgians in the Fast series.
Yeah, he loves some Belgian beer in the Fast movies, and he also has a winery. So I feel like if we ever hung out with Kurt Russell, he'd just be buying drinks. So by the end of it, even if we didn't know what he, like, didn't agree with him, we wouldn't argue because we're just like, I get it. You know,
well, he better be buying the drinks. He has like his Fast and the Furious money.
Oh yeah, he has his winery, Goji Wines.
I just have my government job money. That's much less.
G-O-G-I wines. They're sold out a lot of the times. But one of these days, we're each going to have a bottle. We're going to celebrate our 137th podcast with some Kurt Russell wine, because that's that's our big one.
I thought you were going to say our anniversary.
Yeah. You can also celebrate it with us.
There you go. Thank you, John.
No, I'm getting Vin Diesel's Corona bottle. He made Corona. That's why we're celebrating our anniversary.
I gotta say,
Dom made everything.
Dom Corona.
What about when Eggsy kills Sam Jackson in The Kingsman and he makes him say a cheesy Bond line? Just for effect.
Oh, Sam Jackson has him. Yeah. So he spears Sam Jackson. Sam Jackson falls to the ground. And Sam Jackson's like, aren't you going to say something?
I can't save you. I don't know this line.
Edit it in later. I might just do that. I might just throw in like a quick her. All right. So thank you, Dylan. Those questions were awesome, man. You're a scholar and a gentleman.
That's right. Despite all the heckling, Mark told me earlier he enjoyed answering these questions, and I didn't tell him that you asked them.
It's more of a bit. I like Dylan. We just got a good bit going on.
Dylan's one of my good buddies. I keep trying to see him in Australia again. That's where I met him. And then I've seen him in Vegas twice now. Like, whenever he comes to the States, no matter what, I scrounge together a week somehow and get out there, and we just bro it up for a while.
Nice.
Dylan, I love you, man.
Dylan, you're all
right. Dylan, you're my boy.
You're all right, Dylan. All right, so hey, we already jumped into the topic. We talked about Star Wars: The Last Jedi, directed by Rian Johnson. It made $220 million this weekend.
Despite a bunch of whiny fans.
It made $450 million over like a total. This movie's flying. Critics love it. Honestly, though, when Batman v Superman came out, the IMDb score for a while was like 9.2. So I just think that's a dedicated grouping of fans who did it. So I think all these people going on Rotten Tomatoes are really giving it low reviews. So I don't think it's the mass. I just think it's a bunch of, I mean, there's a lot of angry Star Wars fanboys out there. And you know what, though? It's kind of interesting. If you're a Star Wars purist, you probably do hate this movie. But then you probably also didn't like Force Awakens because it was like A New Hope. And then you probably disliked the prequels. And then you probably hated Return of the Jedi. And you think that Empire is the best. So you probably...
Mark, every single time you added an and, like, I started to get more upset.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's out there.
Will you ever be happy?
And like, I just love all of them.
No, I read something very interesting on the AV Club. They wrote about how Rian Johnson kind of had a big FU to George Lucas and J.J. Abrams. And you know what I thought was interesting? When J.J. Abrams made Lost, he directed the pilot, and he introduced a smoke monster. He introduced a polar bear. Flash forwards.
Well,
flash...
wait, you have to say, there are definitely spoilers coming.
Yeah, oh, spoilers for Last Jedi. Insane spoilers. Lots and lots and lots of spoilers.
We're not going to talk about The Last Jedi for an hour without giving a spoiler.
But so, J.J. Abrams did this opening episode of Lost, and then he was like, peace! And he took off. And then the showrunners were like, we have to deal with polar bears, smoke monsters, this, that, that. So this show... he did one episode of it, and it basically formed what was the rest of the show. So this time, J.J. Abrams comes in, he introduces the world to Snoke, he introduces the world to Phasma.
What did they call him? A mystery spinning huckster?
Yeah, they called him a mystery spinning... He introduced all these people, and who's Rey's? Like, he added all this mystery. And then Rian Johnson comes in and goes, and just blows pretty much everything up. In the Star Wars world, he changes a lot, and he almost didn't give a shit. So I think for people who have been speculating over the last 2 years about Snoke or Rey's parents, or if the milk was going to be green or blue from relaxing sea creatures' udders.
Very contentious issue.
Yeah, I mean, and we worked, you know, what's kind of weird is, you know, I worked Comic Cons for years, and I always thought Star Wars fans were pretty relaxed, but obviously these super fanboys are taking offense at this movie, but I don't think it matters because it's going to make a ton of money and critics love it. So, yeah.
You made the comment about the initial IMDb score. So, like, the people who see one of these comic book movies in the opening weekend are probably the people who are willing to wait in lines or who are buying their tickets way in advance. They aren't your average fan, even fan, not moviegoer, but they aren't even your average fan, right? They're willing to put up with the crowds. Like me, I often like to wait a week or two until the crowds die down so I don't have, you know, sweaties on either side of me. And I'm just really just like, and I'm big. I take up a lot of space. I'm part of the problem. For
so are
other
you making
people.
Those people sweat? Are you like, do you have your arms around other people in the theater?
Well, if they're on either sweating? Side of me, it's like a plane. So then I have to have my arms pressed against my sides, and then I get sweaty too.
Well,
so,
maybe
but,
if it was Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
Maybe if it was Ryan Reynolds. But so those people who go early are probably so psyched out, and maybe they just kind of want to be privileged because if you. Or that kind of person who camps out to get tickets or something. You don't want to be the person who walks out and says, oh, it was good. Like you probably, I think people revel in that. And then the super fans are probably going to love it either way if they're going to do that. And then when people come in later, they're like, oh my God, this has a 10. Like I was going to give it a 7, but their subconscious is like, oh no, it was no 10. And then all of a sudden they're disagreeing.
Yeah.
And you think they drop it at that? Like, if you thought it was an 8 and you see everyone gave it a 10, you're like, oh, it was no 10. Then you're like 6 or 5 instead of your 7. I feel like that might happen.
Like they're seeing that the scores are high, so they're going lower?
Right. And so then when they go on and they see what the scores are, like, no, it wasn't that good. And then that kind of changes your whole mentality when you approach it.
And I feel like there was a lot of reactive, like, ones in here.
Right, and that yeah, I think that that's what's going on. And then people who are hating lose their objectivity. Even if you didn't like it, like a 3 is a bad rating, but they're like 1. You know, they want to hurt the rating.
Yeah, how dare they get rid of midichlorians?
Meg, you think about some of this stuff professionally, don't you?
Yeah, too. I mean, the psychology behind it for marketing purposes. It's funny you mentioned this because I was reading an article earlier talking about how the Rotten Tomatoes score is very fresh, but the fan scores are so low. And Rotten Tomatoes has said that they are actively monitoring to make sure that they are actual reviews that are being submitted by fans. So that it isn't somebody with some sort of bot or some technology trying to drive the score down falsely.
People do that. Mm-hmm. Star Wars fans are passionate. And I have some friends that are pretty level-headed, and they're like, you know, screw this movie. I hate that movie. They hate it. They hate the whole Rose Finn thing. They hate the whole hold the door
You know they're out there secretly shipping Rey and Kylo. That's
yeah,
why
oh, people
mad.
Love
That's
yeah.
why they're mad.
But, I mean, I had a good time. I mean, I probably clapped 5 times. I laughed way too hard when Rey knocked that stone down with, like, she's practicing with her lightsaber. She cuts a rock in half. This rock tumbles down a cliff on Luke's island, and it smashes these fish people's cart.
I know. Those poor fish nuns must have been terrified.
When she shot a hole through her domicile.
Used the ship to slice through the Imperial ship. Our whole audience was so surprised, they laughed at first, and then everyone started clapping.
Yeah, no, me and my cousin Ryan just kind of looked at each other, and we're like, whoa!
But then there are all these people that are like, Admiral Akbar should have had that moment. But I don't know, I like that, I like Laura Dern, I think she's awesome, and I think it's really cool that she got a gangster send-off.
And I like the actress, but they did a good job making me dislike that character, so that I really rounded about when she did that and loved it.
A lot of people are saying, but the thing is, what do you think about the whole, one of the big contentious things, if Holdor, I have her name written down here somewhere, if she would have just simply told Poe what was going on.
Holdo.
But she was in a position of power. So she was probably like, I don't need to tell you. I don't owe you crap.
I get what they're saying from the military sense. There's rank and order, and you're supposed to follow orders and don't ask questions. But from a corporate leadership position and being in a relationship for many years, communication is very important in making sure the whole thing keeps working and moving on track. And that's all she had to do. She could have communicated with him. Don't keep blaming him for being reckless.
I got it. We got a cloaking device. We're going to this planet. Shut up.
Go sit down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, if I gave an what I think is the explanation, it's just like one of a thousand, you know, possibilities. And so it's like, I don't feel like it's the right thing, but sometimes you worry about inciting panic.
Yeah.
If the wrong ears hear something, who people aren't people who are used to hearing, you know, working on certain things. What if he mentioned it to the wrong person and that person panicked, told a bunch of other people who were like, just, you know, like, plumbers on the ship who start panicking and then they don't get on, or it creates this problem. Like, that is a reason not to tell, but I'm not saying that makes it wise for her not to have said it. It's just like a reason.
Yeah. And she didn't have to tell him everything. I mean, she could have communicated. I mean, she basically told him, we have no plan. We're just going to sit here.
It's like,
there is a plan. I can't tell you what it is, but there's a plan. And
I wish you would trust me. Yeah.
She gives like a wink. Okay. Like, hey,
yeah, I mean, there are ways you can communicate things without giving away the whole story.
She's like, geez. Well, I survived velociraptors, Poe. What have you survived?
So are there people out there, like, complaining about that scene in articles?
Oh, yeah. Well,
just the whole relationship or dynamic between them.
I've been in a lot of comment sections. The AV Club, I think, has written the best stuff about the film so far, but I've been reading through the comments. And what I like about the comments there, the people who read it, they're not like, this movie's a big pile of poop. They're like, hey, this is what I didn't like about the film. Then I break it down. Then someone makes an educated comment below it. Like, it's very rarely, like, a very hate-filled. So it's kind of like a logical discussion. So I like to read through that. But every message board, everything that I've read, people have complained about that scene.
So, you know, my cousin Ryan made an interesting comment, because I was just relaying to him that it seems like a lot of fans didn't like this as much as I expected, for instance. And we loved it. And my uncle was with us, he loved it, and obviously the kids loved it. But I mean, I'm a critical jerk. I mean, you know, like, I loved it. There are a lot of things that I could pick at, but I can do that with just about any movie. But Ryan had a quote, and whether he likes it or not, I'm quoting him. I just won't say his last name, but it's the same as mine. He said, I don't even know what it would take to please these people. It's like, it's not 1980, so they won't be happy.
Oh, didn't I basically say that earlier?
Yeah.
We could be friends.
It's like,
yeah, there's nothing to please. There's no way. The prequels didn't please people. Force Awakens didn't please people.
There was a lot to complain about the prequels, but I still can enjoy them in a different way.
I mean, they looked good.
You know what's interesting about Rogue One? I've been hearing some people that I really like, and some of my family members who have, I think, great taste in film, they're starting to say that Rogue One is in their top three of all the Star Wars films.
It's my number one.
Yeah, it's like Rogue One's becoming, I mean, it was huge. It made $1 billion. So
it was my number one halfway through the movie before I even finished it. It was my number one.
It's pretty wild. I never thought that. One of my cousins, he said it was his top three in recent years. It's, I don't know, I just thought that was neat. This is off the subject, but I think people kind of, you know, people love the scene with Vader and that. I think that movie was very bleak, but it also had some fan service, so it managed to appease everybody, new fans and old, Rogue One.
I think it's because it succeeded in so much parallel world building in terms of the nature of their resistance there between episodes four. I'm sorry, why can't I think? Yeah, between episodes, what is it, three and four?
It's before one. Oh, it's between, between three and four. Yeah, you're right.
So it gave all this great parallel world building and notions and rich characters with none of the hokiness. And while I love some of the hokiness of Star Wars, you know, the occasional silly aliens populating the 100 aliens and the, in a cantina here or there, you know, they do so much, something's going to be a little out there. But, like, it was very serious the whole way, and I really appreciate that.
Do you want to hear a big bombshell?
Uh-oh.
There was an Easter egg in Rogue One about The Last Jedi. At the end, when they're going through all the information, Jyn Erso says, ooh, they're coming up with light speed tracking.
Oh,
and some fan was like, ooh. And one of the creators, one of the heads of Disney Star Wars was like, yep.
Nice.
So they put an Easter egg in Rogue One for
The Last
Jedi.
They're solving all of our complaints before we even have them now.
That's pretty cool. By the way, listeners, right now, We did Rogue One in episode 86 of the pod. You should go hear us rave about it. We loved it.
Yeah. Hey. Nice, so callback. let's go watch it again. Let's go shed some tears with them on the beach, and we'll be back to talk more Last Jedi. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I love that scene in Rogue One where that robot voiced by Alan Tudyk bonks that guy in the head.
Dude, every scene with Alan Tudyk in Rogue One was outstanding.
Yeah, K2.
I love wonderful, it. Wonderful droid.
I love when he bonks that dude on the head. I love a good bonk. Like in Princess Bride.
Just Felicity Jones. She's my favorite.
Yeah, she's good. She's my spirit animal.
I was truly disappointed that they just didn't do more with Ben Mendelsohn. He's such a good actor.
That, you know, I don't like how we got punked out by Vader so much. I like how Hux and Kylo Ren, they're kind of like, they're sparring back and forth and they're really petulant. But Ben Mendelsohn is kind of buckled. I don't picture Ben Mendelsohn buckling, though.
You know, so Kylo and Huck in The Force Awakens, I was almost annoyed by their reactions. I considered that one of the lower points of The Force Awakens because it felt not in a way that wasn't true to the characters, but it just felt like two like kids or frat boys jockeying for who was coolest or who was in charge and trying to be alpha and trying to impress their dad or something. And again, it's like maybe I was supposed to be a little off put by it, but in this, they're still doing it a bit now in episode 8, but I actually loved the way they went about it. Here, just something about the execution I liked, but I could see that it was like an evolution in their relationship.
Yeah, and what I like is they're both still bratty, but whoever wins out is going to be in charge of the whole empire.
I love that scene where Kylo is down on the ground and Hux comes in and he sees Kylo's incapacitated and he reaches for his blaster. And then Kylo moves and he just adjusts his jacket right back over the blaster.
Right.
Like nothing happened. Nothing to see.
These two guys, they just need to sit down and have a beer together. And you know what beer would be really great for Kylo Ren and General Hux to share?
A Belgian.
Let me tell you, I just opened my second can of Cigar City's homemade apple pie cider. Cigar City, are you listening? Because I am here again promoting your delicious apple pie cider.
This is our third week in a row pushing Cigar City. Oh, I wonder if Hux...
If only I had a can of it, I would open it too.
Only if Hux liked... I wonder if he'd like Marshall Zukov.
I mean, who wouldn't?
What kind of beer would Kylo Ren drink from Cigar City? What Cigar City would Kylo Ren drink?
No, not I mean, Cigar City. Funky Buddhas. I'm so excited, I'm scared.
No, we're only plugging Cigar City.
Well,
we're
I'm not a branching Funky to Buddha Funky. Girl.
Because when I drive up there and bring you a case of Cigar City's homemade apple pie cider, I'm hoping it's a case that they provision me to bring to Movies, Films, and Flicks headquarters in Georgia.
Oh, I like it. Hey, okay. What beer would mix best with the alien milk?
Ugh.
What beer would mix with any milk? I mean, I feel like you're talking about a lead to gold situation here. But I mean, like, are we talking like the Hunapu?
Yeah, maybe like they do milk stouts now.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like it'll be the green Hunapu.
Yeah, green Hunapu. Oh yeah, see that.
It'll be the green Hunapu. It'll be the sea cow Hunapu.
Ooh, and that would sell.
You know, not to break plug direction, but Swamphead Brewery does an Utterly Calm series. That's UDD, Utterly Calm, and it's their milk stout series.
All right, so we need to go to whatever island Luke was at, find that beast, Papa Hunapu, squish his little udders, and have a delicious Cigar City drink.
I'm telling you, Cigar City, I'm waiting on you guys. I know you're listening. I know
Star Wars milk stout.
I know you're listening.
You guys have been listening since episode one.
They're going to call it the Movies, Films, and Flicks Sea Cow Stout.
We were at their brewery, Megan and I, and Megan brought up Movies, Films, and Flicks, and I saw the bartenders look around, and they all kind of like hit each other in the arm like, yeah, we know that thing.
It's like, dude.
That's right. And they're wearing MFF sweaters. We don't even make them.
We don't even make them, so we got to sue somebody.
Yeah. We're not getting any of that money.
Yeah, much like we solicit for listener questions, if anybody knows who's making all these Movies, Films, and Flicks articles of clothing, please let us know. Yeah.
Hey guys, it was me. I own the logo, so I was doing it behind your backs to drum up some grassroots marketing.
She knew he would never do it.
Wait, speaking of marketing, can we talk about the Porg?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I love the Porg. And I was reading some comments are saying, calling it like Shameless, this, that, and the other. I don't care.
I love Shameless cute things.
Star Wars is at the core. Kids watch these movies. In the midst of all these serious things, you have these adorable Porgs flying around.
Listen, some marketing genius at Disney understands and probably looks at all kinds of YouTube stats and what people are watching. And let's be honest, people, it's cats. Half the Instagram accounts I follow are cats. Cute, adorable kittens all day long. Of course the Porg is successful. Marketing genius.
And Chewbacca, this veteran of the series for well over 40 years, has seen everything. His sole purpose in this film was to be annoyed by Porgs.
And then he didn't eat one. And then he had them nesting. And then he had them nesting where he keeps his spare batteries. Like
that scene where that Porg gave Chewie the sad eyes.
Oh my god, that was so cute. Now I loved every moment with the Porgs. Honestly, I only liked the first scene with the ice foxes. After that, I didn't like the ice foxes. They felt forced. The Porgs were forced, but they felt good.
I like when the ice fox ran away down the tunnel and guided them to the other exit, but that's mainly because my mom has these cats that look very fluffy, just like the ice fox, as if the cat was made of ice and crystal, and looked exactly like that fox as it ran away. It was a personal thing.
See, that's what got me, is that they pulled a Lassie, but they were just these wild animals that were out by a base that is typically unmanned. They don't have a regular exposure to people. There's no reason for them to view a person as anything but a predator. So, yeah, they ran from the, you know, all the big artillery coming in. But then when one of them is, like, guiding them back, like, I didn't like that.
They're going to gray you.
Follow us, Leia.
They're going to get Liam Neeson.
Raised.
I mean, it was very cute, like, wonderful for the kid. But, again, it's like I know that they shoved Porgs in a lot of places, but I like the way that they did it. How, you know, sometimes you see them on the crags, like it's a, like seagulls in it, like an Arctic or, you know, Alaska nature show. And they put them all over. And I don't know, but maybe it's just because I decided that I like them more too. Maybe they just hit my heartstrings. They were kind of like Gizmo and kind of like baby seals and kind of like penguins.
So I like those kind of dog horses on, in the casino part of it. Those were, I thought, adorable. I mean, of course, they were beaten and sad, but they were also adorable.
Yeah,
they were neat creatures.
And they had really expressive faces, which was so much more. The ice foxes, they came off as pretty digital, even though they're pretty and cute. But those dog horses just were, they had the cutest faces.
All right, since we don't have Lazarus here to keep us on track, let's get the third listener question in. And then we'll jump right back.
Oh my god, I totally forgot there was a third listener question. Okay, so another repeat question submitter is David from Fort Lauderdale from Broward College. He asks, and I thought this was an original question that really, really impressed me, and then I saw it all over the internet. But here it is. It's, you guys might have seen this. Since Disney keeps gobbling up studios, which technically could be creating more Disney princesses, which female royalty characters from a movie produced at any point by a company that Disney has acquired should be a princess you can take photos with at a Disney theme park?
All right, we're going to go and let me go first because I have loved Anastasia, and I know everyone's saying this, it's on every list out there, but I have loved Anastasia since I was very young, and people love to make the point that she's not a Disney princess. Well, you know what? Bite us now, because she can be a Disney princess, and her story is magical. And even if the real Anastasia didn't have such a great ending, ours did.
You know, this goes back to what we were talking about last episode, Mark, about people complaining about comparing the DCU, the DC and Marvel universes, and using movies that aren't in the universe to compare, like, whole like kind of flagship Rotten Tomatoes scores and things like that, like using non-universe things.
Yeah.
It's like, but they can acquire things that makes them part of the universe. Mm-hmm. And you don't get to choose that. And you don't get to say, oh, it was before, it doesn't count, because they can just reverse engineer a future movie to incorporate it or reflect on it. It doesn't mean that it's invalid. So it's like, yeah, guys, cut Anastasia a break.
We're going to call that the Rogue One effect. Going back and in the future, solving a problem created.
I got a good one.
Okay.
Crown Princess Tildy of Sweden from Kingsman.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Can you tell that we like the Kingsman?
Yeah, we love Kingsman. And we like Kingsman well, 1 and 2.
I still haven't seen the sequel.
But she's controversial. She has a pretty interesting line at the end of the film of Kingsman. But in the beginning, she was like, I'm not dealing with your crap, Sam Jackson. And then they throws her in jail. This one, she's great. She's a good girlfriend.
I saw people getting really wild with the suggestions online, like people who weren't even close to royalty, just throwing any female figure
Scream
out
Queens.
There. Oh yeah, so Chanel Oberlin from Scream Queens, loved her in season one, but I think a worthy person to be nominated would be Ally McBeal, because she was just fantastic.
So, I mean, people were jumping at, like, I saw some people joking around with, what was her name, like, Neytiri from Avatar.
Yeah.
And someone like mentioned, because she's young and kind of cute, like Newt from Aliens, that is. And I'm like, no, if you're talking about Aliens, then it's the Queen Xenomorph.
That's right. She's the Queen Xenomorph.
Well, no,
they
were saying
I don't know
the
who
younger crowned. Ones, because they would be the princesses.
Well, I mean, presumably, yeah. but that's tough, because like,
wait,
what's the hierarchy? Are you count? Are you giving each egg a number for like the succession order?
Would the queen alien be like the evil stepmom, and then there just has to be a little alien that is the good one and has two evil sisters?
Well, I don't know, but in one of the movies, in Alien 3 or Resurrection, they reference the fact that Sigourney was infected, that Ripley was infected with a queen chestburster. So not all of the drones that are made would be princesses, just the one that is meant to be that cast.
Huh?
In other words, it was referenced in the Alien movies that when Sigourney Weaver was impregnated by a face hugger while she was in the pod and didn't know it in Alien 3, yeah, coming into Alien 3, it was identified that one was a queen.
Hmm.
And so, in other words, there is, it's like with bees, that's determined in their early development. And so all those other aliens wouldn't be princesses. That one that was in Ripley would be a princess.
Gotcha, because the queen did it to her.
Right, so that little bloody thing that came out when she was doing her Terminator 2 fall into the lava.
Did she do a thumbs up when she fell in the lava?
I wish she did. Instead, she was doing one of those closing your eyes, gripping your chest.
Oh, yeah.
Which was like embracing the princess.
There's been some good I gotta do the best falling into lava scenes.
Very random aside, but for those who watched Riverdale, there was an extremely deep alien reference on one of the recent episodes.
Yeah, so these two teenagers were making out, and this other teenager walked by and went, okay, you xenomorphs, because they were...
get a room.
They were face-hugging. That's deep.
Especially for a TV show about modern teens. Another one that I remembered recently was... did you guys ever watch that cartoon Fern Gully, the movie? Where
yes!
So Krista from Fern Gully, the fairy, could now be a Disney princess. I can see that.
Oh, and wasn't her father the king of the fairies, right?
I guess so, yeah.
Or something like that. He was like their king or their chieftain. I feel like he was the king. And God, that had a great cast, though. It had Robin Williams as Batty, and he had that great song. And it had, was it James Woods as Hexus, the kind of smog tar monster?
Tim Curry.
Is that Tim Curry? Okay. I'm thinking of Hades for James Woods. Because they both had that same wispy, smoky look.
Christian Slater was in it. Yeah, I loved Fern Gully. I mean, it was kind of dark for children. You know, they're tearing down the forest, tar, you're all going to die. But it was a cute movie overall.
I love that movie. Mostly Robin Williams, though. That's why. Okay, well, thanks so much for those listener questions from David and Dylan. Keep sending your questions. Other listeners, please send them in if you've got crazy questions. We love answering them. We really appreciate you.
Yeah. More questions, the better. The more random, the better. Yeah, I mean,
the mo better, the mo better.
The mo, and your nickname's Mo.
The better things that you know, the better questions that just make me come up with weird mythologies for two word lines in movies.
Well, I think you guys got a couple of good ideas for more podcasts out of those questions. So.
Dude, yeah. best scenes with falling in lava. And best
gross explosions.
Gross explosions. Those could really be things.
Let's do that. Let's do gross explosions in lava death.
I mean, I'm down. There's plenty of them.
Oh, you know, has a good, somewhat burning by lava, somewhat death.
Volcano.
Anakin.
Anakin.
Yeah.
He gave up the high. Wait, he attacked somebody who had
the high ground. It's over, Anakin. I have the high ground, because in the history of combat, everyone with the high ground always won. Sorry, Amazons.
Aww.
You gave it up.
Too soon.
That annoys me that they did that. All right, we've already talked about that. All right, so getting back to, we have Anakin blowing up in lava. We have Robin Wright being awesome, but giving up the high ground. There's a couple things I want to talk about in this movie. I want to see what y'all think. Snoke.
Are we doing word association? Ugly.
Yeah. Okay. Kylo
Ren. Scarred. Also scarred. Irregularly big chest, according to someone's article.
Yeah, they were saying Kylo Ren had some pecs on him.
Except, but apparently not big arms.
I love the awkwardness of that scene, though, because she can see exactly what he's up to, and he doesn't really see where she is, and they've got this forced intimacy through their little conversations. It's fun. It's awkward.
And she was like, shouldn't you cover up? And he just sits there staring.
And she looks away.
Didn't you say this is kind of awkward for me, too? No, but Snoke. It was cute.
Kylo Ray forever.
Kylo Ray. Ooh. They introduced Snoke, right? He's the ultimate commander. He is the grand poobah. He is basically responsible for everything in this film. He turned Kylo. He
linked the minds of Kylo and Rey.
Yeah, so he's the major moving force on this, and then he just gets cut in half. And a lot of people are mad. They're like, we thought he was going to be something else, but... Did you really want another big CGI bad?
No, it's funny. I can understand the complaint, because the way they presented him, the mystique with which they presented him in The Force Awakens, I really thought there was something like that. I was listening to fan theories more closely than I normally would, like about his nature. And then he's just, you know, the next bad guy, which was fine. And he was a great bad guy. But I kind of felt like when I first saw him, I'm like, so who is he? Who is he that I've seen before? And is it, oh, no one? And I'm like, oh, but again, they did a good job with that character. I just had this little short lapse from expectations, from all these fan theories and the mystique from part seven.
And then what do you think about the very unsubtle moves made by Rian Johnson just to say, I want to put the past behind us, when Luke gets his lightsaber and he throws it behind his back?
I liked that. It was cute.
Yeah. I mean, but it was like this, I liked what they didn't say in that. Like, no, it's put the past behind us, but this, they kind of buried into you. As a Star Wars fan, did you mind that, or did you like it?
I thought it was very cheap. I loved all the humor in this movie, because, like I've heard other people say, so many movies nowadays are just so serious. And I was caught off guard by some of the funny moments right out the gate in this movie, but then I really got into it. You know what's interesting about the whole forcing the put the past on you, behind you? I like that Luke and Kylo are both telling Rey the same thing, but they have very different goals for that.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. They're both trying to turn her one way, and they're both giving partial truths. And yeah, no, that was interesting, and neither were honest. Well, completely honest.
Until they had to be.
Yeah, that was all pretty cool. And what you said about the humor really resonates with me, because I rewatched The Force Awakens the day that I saw The Last Jedi, and there was so much, like, kind of forced in humor in that. I just loved, like all the Han Solo lines, like, oh, really, you're cold. And when he first uses the bowcaster, he's like, this is great. You know, like all those things that really didn't totally make sense circumstantially, but that I loved. And I feel like the jokes showed a love of Star Wars. They were joking about the fact that he was the only one who got Chewie most of the time with the it's cold. They were joking about their relationship with the bowcaster in a way. Like, I like all these humors. And so when it showed up in this, even though this movie felt a little more serious than a lot more serious than The Force Awakens, that humor didn't feel out of place. It felt like it was in line with the current trilogy to me. And I liked the tactfulness of it. Some people are complaining that it didn't seem so tactful. But again, I feel like they were following in good stead with The Force Awakens. And I thought that they were funny.
To those people, I play a gif of Russell Crowe saying, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
I'll tell you, I think my favorite action scene was the one in the beginning with the bombers.
Oh, God, that was crazy. Trying to take out,
what, the dreadnought?
No, my favorite scene is Rose's sister falling and breaking her back, essentially, and then trying to get that controller to release all God. The bombs. That is probably one of the best scenes.
Yeah, she was awesome. Rose's sister was a badass.
I gotta say, Rose was the character that I was like, oh, when is this little bit character going to end? And then I thought, oh, they're making this bit character into a character. And then later I was like, this bit character is really working. And then this bit character isn't a bit character. It just was introduced as a bit. Like, I ended up really loving the way that progressed. Like, at first I'm just like, oh, they're trying to really push this bit character. And it's like, whoa, this is developing somewhere. Like, I liked where it went. I liked that character's arc.
She was a little bit preachy towards the end. Like, she was definitely pushing some messages. The part that stuck out about for me is, if there's anyone who listens to this podcast who also watches Gilmore Girls, she was exactly Lane, Rory's best friend. And that's a bit distracting for me.
It's pretty interesting to me that her and Finn's mission completely failed. And that brings us into DC.
Well, I think that's a red herring.
Or DJ,
really.
Right? DJ, the Benicio del Toro character. What'd you think about him?
I just hated his stutter.
Yeah, that was just an unnecessary acting bit.
Well, let me tell you something else. Of all the acting I've ever seen Benicio del Toro do, that, and of all the stutters I've ever seen on screen, that was some of, when he stuttered, it was his worst acting ever. And it was some of the worst stuttering acting I've ever seen. It totally felt forced and not like a real person who stutters the whole time.
He needs to take some lessons from Colin Firth a la King's Speech.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it just, it was, every time he did it, it was almost like the volume dramatically changed. Like, I noticed right away, it didn't feel like it was a part of the character. It felt like someone said, we should make him stutter when he's nervous or something. And then, but he only stuttered for those bits. There was no graduation. I just didn't like it. But his character, like, even was weird.
I like Benicio on screen, though. I don't know why. Whenever I see Benicio del Toro on screen, I'm happy. So I was kind of down with his character.
And then I liked his introduction.
I love the scene where he actually tells the truth to the Republic. Is that what they're called? What Star Wars fans?
The First Order.
The First Order. And then Hux is like, oh, he was telling the truth.
That he's a little bit ambiguous in his morals. He's really just a mercenary out for his own. He gave Rose back her necklace that was so meaningful to her, but then he went and did something that benefited himself. I don't know. I would be nice if we hadn't seen the last of him and we could get a little bit more.
There were some cut scenes that are going to be in the Blu-ray, but he was featured a lot more in the film, and they cut it.
Episode 9.
Oh, I want more Benicio. Maybe he like loses his stutter somehow.
I hope so.
But
Enough of the annoying characters. Can we all talk about BB-8 and how he pretty much stole the show in this movie?
Oh my God. He did in 7 as well. That they do that droid acting. Well, not acting, but you know what I mean. That presentation of that droid was just so wonderful. Like it was the cute, intelligent kid that, you know, you love. I don't know how to put it.
He's mischievous. He's gotten smarter. Like, he's doing more now.
He wiped out 3 people.
I loved that he kept doing things of his own initiative, and then everyone would be like, did he just do that on his own?
And then there's that adorable moment where Poe's rubbing his belly and they give each other a headbutt.
Oh, so cute. Reminds me of our cats. I love where he, where that drunk alien keeps putting the coins into BB-8, like he's a slot machine, and then BB-8 then fires them at a bunch of people in a fight.
Yeah, he just totally machine guns them. That was cute.
And I want a movie with that drunk gambler.
He blows out his own little fire like he's a real badass.
If you're in a casino, though, and you see a guy putting a change into a robot that's not a slot machine, you probably want to stop that. You want that drunk guy spending money in your club.
Yeah. And other characters that were loved. I mean, what were our general feelings about Rey?
Oh, she's I love Rey.
I mean, she seems
one of the least liked characters though in the whole.
Those people are all wrong.
Oh, I know. They're completely wrong. But I did see a report where they were basically trying to prove a point about how Jar Jar Binks is not the least liked character in the entire series, but Rey is very close to the bottom.
I would fight that person.
I love Rey. I thought Daisy Ridley did a very good job in this. She didn't... I believed her. I believed her during the fight scenes, her acting. This is only, her third major movie? And this is Star Wars. And I think she's handling it really well.
I think she's owning it, man. Yeah. I think she's great.
I pointed something out to Mark. There were a lot of close-ups and long-held shots on her face. If she couldn't cut it acting, those scenes wouldn't have worked at all. I mean, you don't spend that much time on close-up on someone's face if they can't act.
Yeah, when you watch it again, you'll realize that Rian Johnson likes Daisy Ridley's face. But on a movie like this, she carries it. Who doesn't like Rey?
People call her too much of a Pollyanna. She's just all about, trying hard and being nice and whatnot. But what's wrong with characters like that? What's wrong with having hope? Isn't that part of the point of the Star Wars movies?
Yeah, that's what.
Especially since the first one was called A New Hope.
Yeah.
Really? People have said that she's like that?
Yeah. Several articles.
I it's not that I don't see what they're trying to connect. It's an accurate analogy. I just don't think it's very fitting. I don't know. I feel like that came from a place of hate. I'm not trying to judge you people who didn't like her, as much as we clearly love her.
I'm just creating a line in the sand by calling you people.
I'm calling you people. That's true. Because I don't understand. That's why. It's because I don't understand you. I'm coming from a place of maybe ignorance, but I don't understand disliking this character, especially when we're watching a franchise that was built on wholesomeness and then testing that wholesomeness.
I just think she didn't shoot any womp rats.
Right. And it's not 1980. Like my cousin said, it's not 1980, so everyone's, but I don't know. I liked her. I don't know. I guess
the complaint about hers in the first film when she's eating that bread and straight up smacking her food like a maniac. I don't like smacking food. There's a scene in that Force Awakens where she's just...
Aw, Mark, take some pity. She has no parents to teach her the best way.
I mean, she's in the desert. No one's there to see her smack. So, whatever. Like, I don't think she doesn't know she's being rude. I mean, maybe in company she chews better. But watching this, we've watched Force Awakens 4 or 5 times, and just watching that smacking.
That hug between Rey and Finn when they finally get reconnected at the end of the movie, it really got me. It was so nice. I was so happy that they were back together and he saw that she was safe.
Yeah, I don't know. I got a lot of warm fuzzies. And I mean, it's not like I walk in and just love every Star Wars movie. It's like I loved watching The Phantom Menace, but I hated Jar Jar, and I hated a lot of things about that movie, but I still loved watching that movie and can still enjoy watching that movie, mostly for Darth Maul and, all the sea creatures or something. But still, like, I can still watch and enjoy it, even though I think it's garbage for the franchise. But, like, I mean, it doesn't feel good for me. I whine about a lot of movies on our podcast on occasion, Mark. You know this, and like I get downright grumpy sometimes, and you have to catch me and be like, John, like you're really, it's like, but like I don't know, I'm not someone who just blindly loves Star Wars movies, and yet I struggle to understand disagreeing on this one. It's felt really good to me. It felt morally good. It put me in a happy place at the end. I just felt great when I walked out of the theater. You know.
Yeah, we walked out with smiles on our faces and just, ready to talk about the movie. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's like I just went – earlier I was saying you people, but it's kind of like I struggled to understand how something that brought me so much joy upset or bothered or brought about grumpiness or disarray to other people. Like, it's one of those things for me. I just don't get it.
Can we offer those people some counseling, maybe a hug?
I mean, I do think they were being trolled a little bit by Rian Johnson. I don't think he cared. Some of the super fans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just, I'm going to introduce this. We're going to do 2 years of fan service. And Rian Johnson didn't take part of any of it. It's all the fans. But he basically did what Star Wars fans hated, and I thought that was like a really bold decision on his part.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's so funny? Back to the people never being happy. So they get some fan service and they're not happy. They don't get fan service. They're not happy. What will make you people happy?
You peopled them too.
I would love to know what it is that would make them happy.
What would what's like a Star Wars movie that would make Boba Fett lives, right?
Well, they hated BB-8 because he was too close to R2.
So Boba Fett, C-3PO, who's other fan favorites from the series that we could put in here?
It's a very serious Nolan take, a la Dark Knight.
Yeah, you bring in BB-8, or no, Boba Fett is the Joker. Actually, just Boba Fett lives and everyone's happy. But, I mean, the original films pissed a lot of people off.
No! You know how does that happen?
You know what I wish? I wish there would have been a stormtrooper hitting his head on a opening
into the doorway.
Now, I looked into that, and I was going to write a post because everyone knows I like doing my dumb data posts. But on that, it looks like the stormtroopers are doing work on it. They're sawing something. They're using like a laser whatever cutter, and then it opens, and I think it malfunctions, and it doesn't open all the way. So that's why the stormtrooper whacked his head. Because of the malfunction on the door, because they were trying to force it open. So I would blame the technician who did it.
Who was also a stormtrooper.
The stormtrooper hit his head was the one that did it?
You know something I kind of like is how the stormtroopers, regardless of their actual laser shot acuity, appear much more generally adept at their job. And then when we do see them fight our heroes, like, they are always a threat. Force Awakens, the one with that kind of, I don't know, anti-force Tonfa against Finn with Traitor. The lightsaber. And this one too, it comes up again. And not just Phasma, like when these stormtroopers are in a one-on-one, we like see that, you know, they aren't terrible. It's just that they always happen to miss our heroes.
Phasma, I really hope she lives.
And what's interesting is, I like that. Phasma will be back. But what I loved is George Lucas took a lot of inspiration from Japanese films. And he actually, through his career, he helped fund Kurosawa with Ran and a few other films. So he took a lot of Asian influences into this. And then Rian Johnson with the red empirical guards. I don't know if you remember them from Return of the Jedi. They were all cloaked. But in this one, these guys were clothed to fight. I don't know how much you could see with their helmets, but I like that style. So Rian Johnson did take some, has something in common with George Lucas with that influence. And I thought that fight scene was fantastic. Just the chemistry between Rey and Kylo too, where she throws the lightsaber and it shoots into that one dude's head. You know, Kylo does it. I loved it.
All right. Humor me for a minute. I've got a fan theory, a really deep one. So Fox, as we all know, is owned by Disney now, which does the Star Wars franchises. And Phasma's armor is now actually made of adamantium.
What do you mean it's now? Who said that?
It's my new fan.
Okay, I got you.
I've just come up with. And she survives her fall into the fire pit because of her adamantium armor. And
But it cracked where her eye is.
I mean, she just went like this. She'll have one eye. She'll be like Thor.
She put her. I'm doing this in a podcast and no one can see it. She put her hand over her eye.
She can share technology with Thor, have the cool Odin eye patch. Listen, we're going to mash it all together. It's Disney.
Well, I mean, it could just as well be vibranium, couldn't it?
There you go.
I mean.
Oh, so we have Cap. We have Wolverine.
It could be. You know what it should have been? It should have been adamantium armor with a vibranium visor.
And then, so she covered her eye, and she was fine. She got shot out she pulled a Leia, and she got blasted out into space, and somehow she forced herself back in.
Are you listening, Disney? We can make this happen.
I did not see that scene happening.
This is the campaign to bring Phasma back.
I mean, you can still heat up adamantium, though. I mean, just because it won't, even if it doesn't melt, she's going to melt.
Here's the deal. Yada, yada, yada. Cooling system. Yada, yada, yada.
Internal okay, that's alien fair. Properties, cooling, yeah. Cooling system is totally fair.
All these movies have to do is yada, 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 a couple lines.
I've seen stormtroopers in the Arctic, so all right, yeah, I got it.
So what do you think about Leia getting blown out into space and then Mary Poppins, pulling a Mary Poppins and going?
Okay, you know what? That was my one like oh brother moment that along with the Ice Fox Lassie scene.
I felt like I was on drugs when that scene happened. I'm like, is this happening?
Like it's like, are they showing a dream sequence in the middle of this action sequence? Yeah, I didn't know. Like, was this like a force illusion of someone else seeing what was happening to her? And so that didn't really. I'm going to say that didn't fit for me. And, you know, a lot of listeners are free to tell me I'm wrong and I don't get it and call me you people. but yeah, that didn't work for me at all.
Whoa. Do you think she's the daughter of Ego, even though we know who her father is?
No.
Do you think Kurt Russell somehow came to Earth before Anakin? Like, so Anakin's with Padme, right? And then Kurt Russell comes to the planet and he's like, hey.
No, what I think is someone already has the best Mary Poppins scene of this year, and it is not in Star Wars.
Yeah, that's right. I think Ego could be her, because Star-Lord lived out in space for moments longer than people should.
Exactly.
Kurt Russell is Princess Leia's dad.
Could be.
Aw, but then how does that explain the mysticism of the Skywalkers and Darth Vader?
A fanboys will just, you know what though? If fanboys found out that Kurt Russell was from Guardians of the Galaxy 2, was Princess Leia's dad, I think they'd be cool with it.
Well, why can't Ego just be Anakin's grandfather, and then that explains it?
Oh, there you go.
No, that just goes back to the first parent that we haven't seen in the lineage.
Oh my gosh.
Much tidier, thank you, John.
Oh. So Ego is the father of Anakin?
No, Anakin's grandfather, because we saw, you know, Anakin knew his parents and this, that, and the other. No, so it's like,
wait, Anakin didn't know his parents. Anakin just had his mom, and she's like, you just sort of happened.
Oh, okay. It was Ego.
His uncle?
No, it was Luke. It was Ego in energy form.
Yeah. And then he made Anakin, and then Anakin made Luke and Leia. And then Han made Kylo, and then Kylo made Chuck.
Chuck.
Merry Christmas, MFF listeners. And there's your present.
And then Chuck made Debbie, Steve, Ricky, and Chuck Jr.
I'm just realizing I totally didn't realize this was our Christmas episode.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm thankful for this movie. So last thoughts about Last
ho,
Jedi?
Ho, Holdo.
Oh, ho, ho, Holdo.
Oh.
I loved it. We're going to go see it again. I'm a big fan of Last Jedi.
Jingle all the way.
Oh.
Yeah, ditto. To anyone who hated it, I hope you find a different movie that makes you happy and brings you as much joy as this brought me, because I just want to hug a porg and watch this again.
Megan?
I'm going to have to say that we're going to have to find a way to adopt a functional BB-8.
I need a BB. He can drive my car.
I think the cast will get over it eventually.
Yeah, they would love BB. BB would establish his dominancy. Is that a word? I'm losing it. But hey, you want to do some plugs, Love and Good?
You know, I don't have a lot. I just like to thank again our listener question submitters, Dylan from Melbourne and David from Fort Lauderdale. Of course, thank you to Cigar City, who by the time this episode drops will probably have contacted us about a sponsorship deal. I mean, I'm just 6 miles away from y'all. I can stop right by. I can pick up whatever beer you want me to plug. Hunapu Day is coming up in March of 2018. We'd love to cover it.
Let's watch Beer Fest and live podcast it at Hunapu Day.
Just saying,
now
Cigar
accepting
City.
Accepting bottles of Guava Loco.
Now we're now accepting them. So if you want to submit them, we'll take them.
yeah, thank you to all the listeners. Also, guys, thank you for rating and reviewing and subscribing to the pod. We love the feedback. We love the subscriptions. If that is an episode that you really like, make sure to share it with your friends. Let's share the love of MFF. And we appreciate you listening to our nonsense. So for me, Megan, and John.
Cheers, folks.
Bye.